Okay, are we ready?
We're ready.
Welcome to the 1000 Hours Outside podcast. My name is Jenny Urich. I'm the founder of 1000 Hours Outside, and I could not be more pleased to let you know that Emily Morrow is back today. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me back. I can't believe you invited me back. Like, I must have done something right.
Time flies, because when we talked before, you were really at the more beginning stages of book. You know, you've got this book coming out, and here we are. We are about a month from this release, and when this podcast airs, this book will be available to purchase, add it to your home collection. This is one of those ones you would go back to. This is a book you pull off your shelf. I need the remedy. I need some encouragement, and it will be here. It is called Really Very Crunchy, A Beginner's Guide to Removing Toxins from Your Life Without Adding Them to Your Personality. Emily, congratulations!
Thank you so much. I'm so excited about this. I really am.
I love your book. I felt like you just hit the nail on the head by having this perfect blend of so many things. You have a little bit of a blend of your story, which people want to know. Mm-hmm. And your backstory is interesting. You are adventurous. And then you've got this blend of, like, what are we doing when we're pregnant? What are we doing when we have babies? What are sort of the top things that we could be paying attention to as it comes to our health? But all the way through, there is this theme of this isn't a competition, and friendship and relationships and how those are at the top of the tier here. So I so thoroughly enjoyed it. I have pages and pages and pages and pages of notes. What was your thought on just the writing process in general?
So I don't like to repeat myself in my writing. I probably do it a lot more when I'm talking, but it's hard to meet those word goals while still providing quality information. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. The first time I sent my first draft, it was only 38,000 words. And I was like, well, I said everything I want to say. And they're like, no. You have to at least write 50,000 words. That is the deal you signed, that that's what you would provide. And so that was really challenging for me because I didn't want to just drone on and on, you know. So I feel like that amped up the humor a little, me having the opportunity to add in words. And, oh, I don't know. It was harder than I expected, though. And then also, like, just writing things that I thought were true, then you have to have, like, the scientific study to back it up, you know? Mm-hmm. That was really also interesting. Like, I'm pretty sure this is true, but then you have to find something, like, look, here's evidence. So,
yeah. Well, I thought it was interesting because there were several times that I was like, oh, it's really cool that she included this in here. Like, beauty, I thought that was an interesting part that you included beauty products. I was like, oh, I wasn't expecting this chapter, but I'm so glad that it's here. Recipes and remedies. I'm the same way. Some people will say they have to cut their words. The guy had 100,000 words and my editor told me to cut. I was like, huh? What must that be like? So I totally get that. Fantastic book. It's heartwarming. It's practical. It's informative. And I feel like, and I don't know, maybe you wouldn't have known this. Maybe nobody would have known this, but you have lived a life that needed to be shared, I think.
Well, thank you.
You have done things really in an intriguing, interesting way that's different. So let's start there. I mean, I think people see you and they see your comedy. At first, it was just you, and then Jason's inserted a little bit. So they're starting to see, like, a little bit of your family. But if you were to go back and think, like, well, what was Emily like before she was a mom? I would have had no idea. So let's talk about a couple of those things. One is that you guys were camp hosts before that was a thing.
Yeah. So my husband, actually, Jason, he wrote several books and he just self-published them. So we decided to take a chance and quit our jobs and sell everything that we had and move into a, I think it was a 1998. No, it had to be older than that. 1990. I can't remember. An older Class A camper that was, like, super outdated, teal shag carpet, the velvet valances above the windows, you know. And we just, like, sort of updated it, painted the cabinets, little minute changes, and just set off.
Wow.
In that, not really even knowing what we were doing. We hadn't even heard of camp hosting. So our plan was we could only afford to move once a month, because it costs $600 to fill up our gas tank. So we would go as far as one gas tank could get us, and then we would just camp out there for a while. After we did that for 1 month, we were the only people in this really weird middle of nowhere Alabama campground. So strange. The park ranger from the camp in Gulf Shores came to like check out this campground, and she saw us and she was like, oh, what are you guys doing here? Why don't you come down to Gulf Shores? You could be camp host. Oh, you're young. You could do manual labor for us. And so we were like super excited to get a free place to camp, like right on the beach.
Wow.
It was really fun. And so then we kind of just started looking for positions through that. We just really wanted to see the United States. We had never traveled much and we really wanted more adventure in our lives. So that's kind of what we did. It was fun.
I think that most people haven't, especially then, you know, it's like, okay, when 2020 hit, a lot of people did that. But like before people even knew what a camp host was. And so you guys are like cleaning bathrooms. You give some advice in there about the bathrooms. Like Jason got bit by a dog.
Yes, we were cleaning some bathrooms and somebody had chained up a dog in one of the bathrooms. I guess they were having a party or something and it bit him in the butt. We told the park ranger about it and he ended up filling out a police report and everything.
Wow. I mean, there's story after story in here, which is really cool. It's really neat to get a little bit, along with the information, along with the encouragement. It's a little bit of your memoir in here. I think it's really neat to see the backstory and to see how adventurous that you were young, and to take a risk like that is really inspiring. And then you would be like riding your scooters.
Yeah.
I mean, this was like your form of transportation.
We didn't have a car, so we just had the Class A. We didn't have much money. Okay, like 1 month, my husband's royalties were $600. And that's like what we had for food. We didn't have cell phones. We just used the campground's internet, you know, so we did cut down. We were like living on the edge without any sort of health insurance or anything. So yeah, we just had a little scooter that we got for a couple hundred dollars, which we had a scooter when we lived in South Korea. So we thought like that'll totally be a wonderful form of transportation. But the thing about Korea is you're in a big city. And when we're in a RV camping like in the middle of nowhere, it takes an hour by car to get to the nearest store. So like you're on a little scooter that can only go 50 miles an hour. Not 50 miles an hour, like 40 miles an hour, especially with the two of us on it, riding on the shoulder of the highway because we didn't want to slow down traffic, using bicycle helmets because we didn't want to invest in real motorcycle helmets. Just lots of, not sure it's really full of wisdom there, you know.
But this was your real life and you took risks. You tried stuff. Yeah. And this was really the gateway into your crunchy lifestyle because you said you had the month where the royalties were not what you were expecting. They were lower. So, you know, you had this moment. And I mean, we've seen it. Like you go to the camp store, or I think you talked about like one place. It was like you could get food at the post office. I mean, like you're in the middle of nowhere. Stuff's more expensive when you're in the middle of nowhere. And so this was the gateway because you were like, I can't afford that processed food. I'm going to have to try and do stuff with whatever I can make. Mm-hmm. And it's started there.
Yeah. So I just frantically Googled how to buy cheaper groceries without using coupons because I'm just honestly intimidated by the whole coupon game. I'm not organized at all. I see people with like 3-ring binders and that just like, no, that's not me. So yeah, I just found an article that said buy only things that have 5 ingredients or less. And so that cut out so much available because I guess they were saying like, if it has more than that, you need to be making it yourself. So that's what we did, which cooking in an RV can be sort of a challenge, but that was fun. We started feeling a lot better. Mm. A lot of things that we thought were normal, like heartburn and bloating and a lot of gas that came from eating the foods that we were eating, went away. And we're like, wait a second, what? Mm-hmm. We should have been eating healthy this whole time. So that sort of started the journey into healthier eating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it starts somewhere. Okay, so that's what it was. It was like, if it has more than 5 ingredients on the label, which is mostly everything that's processed, mm-hmm. you're not going to choose that. And you start to make your own things and you feel better. Mm-hmm. And no one can say anything against that. If you feel better, you feel better.
Yeah.
And it takes you down this road. But this is a space that can be very judgmental. And so this is one of the things that you're tackling in this book is how do we navigate, especially in a world where we're overloaded with information, everybody's trying to make decisions or they're just trying to survive even, mm-hmm. and you're just moving forward. And this becomes a spot where people sometimes say the wrong thing or give the wrong look. So you told mm-hmm. a story about Vicky, which I'm assuming is probably not her actual name, but
close.
And okay. And you give her some nice soap. What happens?
Oh, well, that was Amy. So yeah.
Oh, Amy is the soap.
But I did change her name. That's not even close.
Vicky is the rainbow cake.
Yes. There have been a few people, yeah, who have really majorly influenced me. I gave somebody some soap. It was just lemon verbena hand soap. I thought it was perfectly innocent. It said made with essential oils, and I was going to an oil party. So I was like, oh, she'll love this. And a little linen tea towel. You know, I didn't know her that well. And when she pulled it out, she was like, oh, this is actually so toxic. But like, I always feel like I need to be like, but she's so nice. Like, she's a really nice person. Mm-hmm. But she just allowed her knowledge of toxins and things that aren't good for you to cloud reality. You know, like, I'm a real person who has real feelings, who just yeah. spent my money on her, and she wasn't thinking about that, you know?
Yeah.
But it's so easy to do when you start making choices, and then you start learning more, and then you're like, how could you ever do that? Why would you ever buy such garbage? But mm-hmm. I don't know. You know, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that was the first time that I felt really small in that way.
Yeah.
And I didn't ever want to make someone else feel like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that I have, probably, because it just happens naturally whenever you learn something and then you want to share it and people get defensive. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. We have to try to not be offensive, but we also have to try to be unoffendable. Just be open, mm-hmm. willing to learn.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's both sides. And also sometimes we do have really good information to share. And I think it's about learning how to share it in the right way at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there is never a right time in certain situations. And mm-hmm. I love that you tackled this piece of it, because I think it's just going to become more and more of a thing because there's just so much information floating out there. And because we're so stretched thin and
yeah.
all of those priorities. And you said, here I was. I thought this was a huge sentence, Emily. Here I was trying to make a friend, a lifetime struggle of mine, and I gave her poison. And then you said, should I call everyone who had washed their hands in my home in the last 30 days and let them know they had been exposed to an 8 out of 10 toxic substance? Because she had told you, like, you should download this app so you know how toxic. So this is funny. I mean, obviously, it's going to be a funny book, but I thought you slipped in, and it was in parentheses, Emily. This is like an in parentheses. It's probably one of the most vulnerable statements I've ever read in a book. You said, here I was trying to make a friend, a lifetime struggle of mine. And I think a lot of us feel that way. This is a really tricky, especially I think when you become an adult and there's kids involved and mm-hmm. there's all these different lifestyle choices. So you gave some really, really good advice throughout this book, and it was woven all the way. It wasn't just like in one section. It was woven from beginning to end, even right up until the last sentence. Can you talk to us about how to handle really both sides of it? You've handled both sides of it. So you talk in this book about friends and family and these different social situations like parties. Mm-hmm. So let's start on the unoffendable side. How have you learned to navigate those pieces where someone, because Vicky's story then was different, right? Where she was like a little more conscious of it mm-hmm. because you served her the rainbow cake with all the food dyes.
Mm-hmm.
And she was less like, this is poisonous, but a little more like a teachable moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she just basically said no thanks and then didn't say anything else. You know, I offered it to her and her children. I didn't make the rainbow cake, okay? But I offered it to her and she just said, no, thanks. That was it. Like, you don't have to chastise someone for yeah. making a different choice than you. Life is not a game. You don't get points for making healthier choices. You do your best where you can. That's how you win, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So then on the other side, which is a tricky one, which you're saying, this stuff matters a lot to me. Like, the red food dye matters to me and screens matter, and they do. It's such a tricky balance because they do. And you're trying to figure out, like, well, how do I navigate this with kids going to grandparents or going to an aunt and uncle or going to the birthday party of their friend that's in the neighborhood. How are you handling those types of situations?
I have a hard and fast rule that if someone wants to ask me a question about my thoughts or my opinion, then I'll share it. But other than that, I'm just not going to share what I think about something. Like if they want to know, they'll ask.
Or they can look on your Instagram.
Yeah.
It's all there. I mean,
it's not really fair that I have this platform now. But before that, I mean, but the platform actually can be kind of tricky because I've met people who don't know that I have that. And then they ask me like, oh, what do you guys do for a living? And then I tell them and then they get on there and then like, oh, I can't be your friend or I don't know what's reality. Like I've had several people who became my friend in real life stop watching my videos because they can't differentiate what is real, you know? And because I'm not judgmental or mean, but then they see me being this character, you know, who's really like in your face sort of. And it just influences their view of me. So
you're like, oh, it's already hard enough to make friends. Let me make it harder on myself by having my videos be seen billions of times.
This is kind of sad and vulnerable, but I had a couple friends want to throw me a book launch party. I do have a small group of friends that I recently made, and it's been so wonderful to have women to connect with, but they wanted to throw me a book launch party and they asked me for a guest list. And I was like, huh, I don't really have any friends. So it's you guys.
Aw, that is vulnerable. But I think it's important to say, Emily, because I think that there are a lot of people that would say, and you know, that's actually really very normal. There's this Dr. Mike Rucker. He says, it's really normal to have 3 to 5 friends. That's about the normal amount. Mm-hmm. So those are good things to say, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you're trying to be unoffendable. You're trying to not offend. And you say these things in the book. Do the best you can. I mean, it's really touching. It was really touching. I loved it.
Well, thank you.
And I thought people are not really saying these things in a time when they're really needed to be said. And I thought you did such a beautiful job. You even had, I thought this was so good, Emily, this quote from Dale Carnegie, success in dealing with people depends on having a sympathetic grasp of the other person's viewpoint.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's the old treat someone the way you want to be treated. You know, the golden rule. Doesn't make sense to place your convictions above the way you interact with someone.
Yeah.
People have feelings. And there's so much in my book about how loneliness is on the rise. And so why are we isolating ourselves just based on our ideas about food dye? Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense. Or organic food. And I think the important thing to remember is just that life is about balance. And if you're making the best choices you can when you can, then it's okay to not be perfect all the time.
Yeah.
Your body was made to remove toxins. Your body is able to filter out toxins. So it's okay if you're exposed to some. It's okay to have that opportunity to clean that out. But obviously, make healthy choices when you can. And one thing I always think about food is I know that the rule in my family is that we're eating whole, healthy foods. And sometimes there's going to be an exception to the rule. That's okay. Everyone's going to be fine. The rule is the normal thing we do is eat whole, healthy foods. I think a lot of people in the crunchy lifestyle already kind of become scared of a lot of things. And that's actually an eating disorder. Whenever I heard that, orthorexia is like the fear of foods. And I realized maybe I was towing that line a little bit and just decided to let that go. I'm not going to allow myself to be scared of food anymore. So I think anxiety is far worse for you than anything you're going to encounter in the real world.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Anxiety, loneliness, sleeplessness, because you're worried about it.
Yeah.
All of those different things.
On weekends, we're typically off on another adventure. Whether it's a scenic hike or a quaint town visit, I keep my Vessies with me because they effortlessly adapt to every twist and turn, ensuring comfort and style in our sometimes spontaneous escapades. Whether it's with the kids or just my husband and me, which is pretty rare, I love stepping into a great outdoor adventure with Vessies Storm Burst boots to capture the beauty of springtime landscapes. Their robust style is perfect for our nature excursions, adding a little dash of elegance to our outdoor explorations. The Vesti collection caters to every style. Whether you're dressing up for a night out or gearing up for a weekend hike, these shoes seamlessly blend into your wardrobe while offering the practicality of waterproof footwear. Ready to refresh your spring wardrobe? Vesti has you covered with footwear that fuses style with practicality. Head over to vesti.com/outside to explore their versatile collection and automatically claim your 15% discount on your first order upon checkout. That's vesti.com/outside for 15% off your first order.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
And one of the other themes throughout this book is that crunchy is a spectrum. And I thought for me, I love this. It goes all the way through, but I thought for my own story that, you know, I think that if you came and looked in our pantry, you would cringe. You know, we're trying. But ironically, I found out about you because you talked about 1,000 hours outside on your channel right at the beginning, and people were sending me the video. And I was like, wait a minute. Wait a minute, is what I'm doing crunchy?
Crunchy.
But I mean, it was like right off the bat. And additionally, it was like keeping track of the dog's hours outside, and your dog and our youngest daughter have the same name, which I just thought was so humorous. But my part of the crunchy piece, and obviously we are trying, I'm going to a sourdough class this weekend with a friend, but we're trying. But one of the things that we do is we get outside. Mm-hmm. And so we've got that part. You know, we're aiming for this balance between screens and outdoors, but also I'm not super good about the oils and the oils that we consume, or when we have junk food and we travel and I'm like, you know, so you're always like trying to be like, okay, I could do a little better. Books like this help you to like make small choices, because that's all we can ever do is, I think, mm-hmm. make small steps.
Micro.
Yeah, but I just love that you said crunchy, because I'm on the spectrum of that, mm-hmm. right? I'm on the spectrum. And mm-hmm. in some areas, you know, it's like, well, maybe we're doing pretty good. And in other areas, I'm like, not so good. So can you talk to us about how you, I thought this was a huge sentence. You were talking about your entry into this crunchy lifestyle, which I would imagine that people might think you've been doing this since you were a kid. Your mom was a hippie, but that is not the case. You said that the great soap blunder happened in 2017.
Yeah.
That's not that long ago that you were washing your hands with poison. And here you are helping people to live better. So you talked about when you first started really very crunchy. I was coming off 5 years of struggling with feeling inadequate as a crunchy mom. 5 years. How do we handle those feelings of inadequacy?
We have to stop comparing ourselves to others. You have to come to the conclusion that you are doing the best you can. And the only person you have to convince is yourself. And you have to stop trying to compare yourself to other people, especially people on social media. It's so fake. It is so fake. The number of people who think that my videos are reality is shocking to me. I mean, we script our videos a lot. And my kids, I'm so thankful my kids have the opportunity to see how fake social media is, because they see me say a line like 15 times until I get it perfect. Or the way that like our house is a total wreck if you moved the camera just slightly, yeah. like within frame, it looks perfect. It's just not worth your time to compare yourself. And then even in real life, you can see what your friends are doing. You can see that your friend brings a ball jar full of water to the park and they have all their glass containers and whatever, but you don't know if they bought Chick-fil-A and then poured it into the container or, you know, whatever. So it's just not worth it. Just do the best you can and convince yourself that you are doing the best you can. And that's all you can do.
Mm-hmm. And then you find these other little things. And that's what I found in my life. I can make these small tweaks here and there. I mean, ironically, I did just talk to this lady recently who said when she learned about chlorinated water, she's like never had, it's been like decades. She's never had it. I was like, oh, I was like, I mean, this is a small thing. I'm like, I could probably bring my water bottle into a restaurant.
Yeah.
But like then your restaurant puts you on the other end of the country. I mean, it is bizarre. It almost feels like this up and down because there's so many pockets of it. Mm-hmm. But then you read a book like yours and you're like, well, I could open the windows more so that we had more fresh air in our home or just different things like that. I thought that that theme of your book gives you a lot of peace as a mother who is overwhelmed and trying to figure things out. And often we're trying to figure things out when we are tired and when we haven't slept the night before and we're in the middle of this panic moment. Mm-hmm. It was a peaceful foundation throughout the book. It was not judgmental. More so, it just it like encourages you to like, man, oh, maybe you could try that little thing, you know, like that you've never heard of.
One thing that I really discovered while I was writing this book, I know that a lot of people think the crunchy lifestyle is for a certain income bracket because a lot of things can be really expensive. But the truth is, the crunchiest option is sometimes just the simplest. And sometimes it saves money, like wearing your clothes until they're completely falling apart instead of just buying new clothes all the time or borrowing things. Or like you said, opening the windows for fresh air in your home. Using vinegar to clean instead of all these scented sprays. There are so many cheap, easy ways that I share in my book to up your crunch factor without adding a lot of stress or financial strain, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right, which takes us to some of the trade-offs, which I thought were interesting because there are some trade-offs. One of them is time. Mm-hmm. And actually, the first time that you and I talked, I can't remember, it was like in the middle of the afternoon. It was, you were like, I got to go prep dinner. I mean, it was like 2 p.m. I don't know what it was something. I was like, oh, if it had to. But there is a little bit of a trade-off here, and you have to make those decisions. And I was surprised that you didn't do cloth diapers for your young. I mean, surprise is the wrong word, but like, oh, like, oh, this is a crunchy mom. Of course, she did cloth diapers. And I thought it was such a big thing that you wrote in there. We didn't have the upfront investment. Mm-hmm. And you, there's other things you can try, like elimination, communication, and all those things. But this is hard. There is a trade-off. And sometimes we don't have the money for the thing. But you give a lot of options in there about thrifting. And can you go trade your time and work at a little farm? What advice would you give to a, I mean, because this is the thing, right? I'm talking a lot. I want to share the story, though, really quickly. You make choices in life. So when we first started having kids, I made the choice to stay home. And we struggled financially quite a bit. I mean, I never bought a new thing of clothes. We did all mom-to-mom sales. And I had a girlfriend who had her first child at the same time. And she said specifically, I want to be able to buy my kids whatever clothes I want to buy them at Children's Place at any time. So I'm going to continue to work. And now they have a really nice pool. And I'm like, oh, well, I mean, there's pros and cons to the decisions you make. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'm like, I would like to have a really nice pool. You know, I mean, you're kind of, you got to make them. So what are some of the trade-offs that, I mean, your house smells like vinegar. That's definitely a trade-off.
Smell evaporates quickly, Jenny. It's not so bad.
I don't know.
But somebody did. I do these unboxings on my channel on Instagram. Well, I guess I post them on YouTube. I post them across the board.
Yeah.
So somebody sent me this really clean cleaner. Can I say that? Clean cleaner. Like, you know, good ingredients. And it smelled amazing. And I would just find myself like spraying it and wiping the counters, like even when the counters weren't that dirty, because it was just like, oh, this is so nice compared to vinegar. So, you know, I can see how people still like to use fragranced items and ones made with like oils or herbs are generally a little more expensive. So I can see how it's hard transition. So yes, vinegar smell would be a little bit of a trade-off, but it's not so bad. It goes away. What other trade-offs? I mean, like I said in the book, I was like you. My husband was a reporter at a local newspaper, wasn't making very much money. I knew that I wanted to either have a job where I could have my child with me or stay home. So I was a nanny. And I went back to work 2 weeks after having my first kid just because we needed the money. That was like so shocking to me. I thought, well, moms do it all the time. They have a baby and then they have to come home to their other kids. But when you haven't ever had a baby and you're a new mom and you're trying to figure everything out and you're in somebody else's home, you know, like it was really shocking to me, but it all worked out. And I actually learned some crunchy things out of it, like baby wearing and just simplifying my life so that I could focus on what really matters. And I think it's worth it. I think it's worth the investment in your children. You may get less time to yourself, like whenever you choose to do things a little bit the harder way, like cooking all your meals and things like that. But in the end, I don't think you'll regret living in the present and focusing on what's important to you.
Mm-hmm. You feel fulfilled. Yeah, you get that out of your book.
Yeah.
That there is a trade-off here. You say, I don't spend much time consuming entertainment. And, you know, I wear these clothes over and over again. And these are things that you are giving up to a degree. You know, you give up having new clothes for your kids or these cute little outfits and that type of thing. But no regrets. No regrets. I love that. Let's talk about play, because play is in here. Isn't that interesting that play lands in the crunchy category? That's what I was saying. I was like, when someone said the thing about 1,000 hours outside being in your videos, I was like, well, I just kind of thought this was normal.
Well, Jenny, I feel like you beat me to it. Like,
I have like an existential crisis.
I would have made up this movement, but you did it first. You are my hero.
Well, what's interesting though is that people have said that to me so often, Emily. Like, I wish I would have come up with that. And I'm like, well, no, you don't, because for years and years and years, people were like, you're weird. I was like, okay, well, whatever. This is working for us. And I think that's part of it. If it's working for you and you're fulfilled, that carries a lot of weight. So sugar, screens, shoes. These are some big categories here. And you say, you go there. Both sugar and screens are highly addictive. We're talking cocaine level addictiveness. But their overuse has become so mainstream in our society that no one bats an eye at babies in car seats with tablets propped in their laps, or little ones at a restaurant unable to sit still without a snack of fruit juice and their own personal tablet.
Oh, that sounds kind of mean, Jenny. Now that you read it.
It's not mean. You went there. And I prefaced, right? This book is very gracious.
Mm-hmm.
But you did go there on some of the things that really matter, because our kids only get one childhood. And you gave a story, and I thought this was a really good story about you had dropped your child off at some sort of I was assuming it was like a church thing or something, mm-hmm. some sort of a spot where there's whatever. And you come back and pick your kid up, and there's toys everywhere and kids and people, and all the kids are just on tablets.
Mm-hmm. My kids were sitting next to a kid who had a tablet. The tablet was actually so large, it was like splaying into my children's lap. And I was just shocked, first of all, because I didn't know what they were consuming, and I didn't say that was okay. We're really picky about our screen time. We do one movie a week on Fridays. That's like our movie night. My kids love screen time. And that's one of the problems is I saw my older son when he was younger. I gave him probably like a 30-minute episode every day, but he was so focused on that episode. Like, he really wanted it so bad that I was like, this can't be good. How much he's hyper fixated on, when do I get to watch it? When do I get to watch it? When do I get to watch it? That I was just like, nope, we're not doing that. We can watch one movie on Fridays and that's it. That way you don't grow up to be like super weird. You know, like, you can kind of know some references and stuff. I'm already making them weird enough. We don't need to influence it even more by cutting it totally off. So just seeing them in that room with that tablet in their laps, all the toys that they could possibly imagine, that they could possibly want, and they weren't playing with them. They were missing out on an opportunity to have fun and develop and grow, to stare at a screen with their necks, like, horrible posture, mind you. You know, like,
I did love that sentence, and it took me by surprise, because it's not necessarily what most people would think, but you put it in there. It said, I wrote it down. I loved it so much. I laughed when you said, you go to pick up your kid and they're sitting there, they're slouched, right? Oh, here were three kids sitting in a chair staring down with terrible posture at something fake when there was a whole room of real toys and real opportunities for development and connection. And I thought, I mean, you put that in there, right? In between the commas with their posture. I mean, because that matters a little bit too.
It matters. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I found a study while I was writing my book in the Journal of American Medical Association. Children ages 3 to 5 who were exposed to more than 1 hour of screen time a day had less development of white matter in their brain, which is the part of the brain responsible for language, literacy, and cognitive skills. It's not so much that screen time is the reason, like it didn't cause the less white matter. It just got in the way of other experiences that would have developed that. And that is so powerful.
It sure is.
It's just like, you know, exercising. We have so many things that keep us from doing it. And it's the same thing like with going outside. There's just something luring us in, all of these healthy habits. It's so much easier to just sit on your phone or choose not to do them. But it's not hard to just set that down. Like once you choose to set it down and live in the real world, you realize how icky it is to be on it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And you said that. You were like, look, after I sit and watch these television shows, like, do I feel better? And someone had said that one time. It's like, you know, when you go to choose what you're going to do with your leisure time, you really do not feel better binge watching. You don't. But mm-hmm. you do feel better if you take that little extra step. And like you talk about, you do the walk after dinner. You do a handcraft, you whatever, you do feel better when you do things. And then you said, which I think this is the most important thing, but it takes some time to get there. If you make those decisions early on, you end up with kids who know how to play. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about how that affects your daily life? You have boys that know how to play.
It makes my life so much easier, honestly. I can cook dinner for over an hour, and we live in a neighborhood that's really safe. My neighbor across the street is retired. I'm pretty sure he just stands at his window and stares at my children playing outside, so I feel really safe. He's our little guardian of the neighborhood. So we live in this area where my kids can just go outside and play on their own, so I am very blessed there. I understand that. But they will just go outside and entertain themselves because they know how. Boredom fosters creativity, and they have been given the opportunity to be bored. Like this morning, I was getting ready for this. I was like skimming my book really quick because I was pretty sure I was going to forget everything. And they were upstairs pretending to be flying squirrels. They had pillowcases. They had taken their shirts off and they put their arms in pillowcases and they were just jumping off the bed like they were flying squirrels. They came up with that on their own because they didn't have anything else to do. They're just so good at playing and it makes life so much easier. And even not just in the home, knowing how to play in a public space is super helpful. They can entertain themselves. If I want to sit there and have a conversation with another mom, they're not just like constantly needing input from me or begging to look at my phone or anything like that. You know, they can sit down on the ground and play duck, duck, goose or whatever. Like it's not complicated. Yeah. Just let them be bored so that they can learn how to play.
Oh, and doesn't that just go back to what you said earlier? You were like, this is one of the simpler options. This is one of the cheapest options because they're not in some adult-directed activity that costs X amount of dollars. They're just doing nothing. Mm-hmm. But it does take a bit to get there. Like, I remember, like, my two-year-olds couldn't play by themselves. You know, my mm-hmm. three-year-olds, maybe. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a long time. When you've got a six-month-old and an eight-month-old and you're scrambling to find time, it feels like, I mean, 3 years? That's a pretty big investment. But it doesn't pay off for the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. Your boys are still pretty young. You know, if you've got a 6-week-old and you're trying to wait till they're 4, I mean, that's going to seem like a really long time away.
Well, I mean, we start out making poor decisions, like propping babies up in containers so that they can see what's going on instead of allowing them the opportunity to try and develop certain motor skills. Or like we try to entertain babies so young. like with little mobiles. I'm not saying it's all wrong, but just right from the beginning, we're like shoving stuff in their face. Or I have seen babies in car seats, babies at the store with a tablet. And it's like, what? There's so much going on, so many opportunities for them to look around and learn and be invested in other people and see their emotions on their faces and learn through that. You know, like there are just so many opportunities kids are missing out on. Mm-hmm. And I think we just try to overstimulate them. Like we're trying to pacify them before they even need it.
Yeah. Yeah. And the point is that the benefits here are for you and them. Mm-hmm. Because you said people ask me the same thing. How do you do all the things that you do? People say, how can you make these videos and a book and homeschool and have healthy meals? You say, my kids can play.
Yeah, it's true. I'm not a superwoman.
Yeah, it's good for you and it's good for them. So it takes some investment off the front, but it pays off fairly quickly, I think. And you even talked about old-fashioned activities. Like, that's what you're doing with your forest friends. And I thought, oh, it's such a cool thing. Like, everyone's so thrilled to have a jump rope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so fun. I mean, how did kids entertain themselves before 1985 or whenever? I don't know. You know, like, mm-hmm. they played kick the can or jump rope or... We flew kites, one of our forest friends' gatherings, and that was the best one we've ever done. It was so much fun. The kids loved it.
Simple things don't cost that much money and bring a lot of joy. And that's what you had said. One of your sons noticed, I don't think I actually typed this out in my notes, but I remember reading it, that one of your sons noticed and said something like, everyone seems real happy.
Mm-hmm. Everyone's so happy, Mom. Yeah.
And even they noticed that at a young age. And I think that's a little piece of it too, that it is our responsibility to teach our kids that simple things can be satisfying mm-hmm. in a world where they're inundated with screens. So I thought that was really beautiful about the old fashioned activities.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No-Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
Can I say one thing on that really quick?
Yeah.
And this might not even be worth sharing, but it was funny to me. This Christmas, we went to this outdoor event and they were playing the movie White Christmas up on a screen. My kids are 3 and 6. So like, I think most of the concepts from that movie would probably go over their heads, but they sat there. That's like their favorite Christmas movie now. Oh. They were so into it. That is such a slow movie. Kids don't need all this fast-paced, flashy stuff. And we're harming them by causing those dopamine hits in their brain constantly. It's not helpful that in the future, they're just like getting bored. I keep seeing all these memes about how when somebody's watching something, they want like split screens and like more and more and more stimulation because their brain is just used to all this flashy, like way too much input that regular real life is too boring and they're having a hard time coping. Anyway, that's all I was going to say about that. Slow it down.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot. Dr. Victoria Dunkley writes about that in her book, Reset Your Child's Brain, which isn't a book I would have read initially because it's one of those like a 4-week plan to reset. And I don't tend to gravitate to those types of books, but I did read it because I was going to be talking with her and I love it. It's one of my favorites because she says that fast moving stuff and the interactive stuff like the tablet, which seems like, oh, it's educational, whatever. Mm-hmm. She said that dysregulates the nervous system. And so her suggestion was to do exactly what you're saying. Slow movies.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I'm going to have to check that book out.
Yeah. And here's your kids that already at these young ages, they know how they feel.
Yeah.
Actually, that reminds me of something else I thought was really interesting. So I would have never thought this, Emily. You're talking about how like social situations, which you didn't really get there. Like this is tricky because there's holidays all the time. There's birthdays all the time. Is almost constant where your kids could be consuming these different types of foods that aren't that good for their bodies. And you feel like as a parent, if you don't allow your child to have X, Y, and Z, you're depriving them. And I thought your decision and approach makes so much sense. You were talking about how you talk to them ahead of time about it and you're giving your kids a choice. And you said, this is so interesting to me, Emily. You said, my 6-year-old understands how his body feels after having these different types of foods or drinks or whatever. And so very often he'll make the choice just to have your alternative. I was like, whoa, could you just think, oh, I'm the worst mom. I'm depriving. But it is true that kids are smart and they understand. I mean, they feel crummy like how we feel crummy. So can you talk about an instance? I know you give some instances in the book, like at the skating rink, like in real life, what does that look like? How does that go?
When we go to a party, I always tell my kids ahead of time, like, we're going to a party. Would you like to make your favorite dessert? Or they love cupcakes. So usually they want a cupcake and we'll just make whatever they want, whatever flavor they want. We can do it at home. I buy like naturally dyed sprinkles. So it's still exciting. They have fun. Put it in a little glass container, stick that in my purse, sing happy birthday, whatever. Everybody sits down to get their plate. I just whip out my little glass container and set their cupcakes on there. Like nobody even notices, really, except we did go to a party at a trampoline park earlier this year. And there was a lady there who I think followed me. She knew who I was. But I don't think she was a fan of my videos. So she was staring at me, like waiting to see what was going to happen. This was a rainbow cake, huge, like bright colored, whatever. We're huddled around the birthday girl singing. My kids are all happy. And then she like, her eyes are just like laser beams on me, waiting to see if I'm going to give my kids a piece of cake or what's going to happen. And I whipped out that little glass container and put it on their plates. And like her face was like, oh, you would. Oh, you would.
Yeah.
You know, but if I had given them the food dye, she probably would have been like,
Yeah, there's no winning. There's no winning with that person.
But it was just funny. No other kids even notice except for my son, his little friend who's like mutual friends with all of his other friends, is always at the birthday parties, always sits right next to my older son. He's always like, can I have one? Can I have one of yours? And he just started making him one because
I would not have expected that either. Then it starts to permeate because the other kids, then that's how life is. They always want what you brought. No kid ever wants what, you know, hardly what their mom brings. They want what the other. That's really sweet. I love that. I mean, our kids are older now, but I'm like, oh, if I could go back in time, I wouldn't have even thought to do that approach. And you said, no one seemed to care or notice. I don't make a show about it.
Yeah, you don't have to be like, my children can't eat that. You know, like my kids already know the drill ahead of time. And then I just go over to the table and do it. Like it doesn't have to be a big deal. And you don't even have to make something from scratch. There are like boxed options that are healthier if you wanted to. like Simple Mills stuff. I'm not saying it's like perfect, but it's not that much harder to prepare either, you know?
Yes, it's the spectrum. It's the spectrum. Yes. Mm-hmm. Wow. I really got so much out of this book, and we're not going to have time to get there, but Jason ends every chapter, which I wasn't expecting. And I thought was a really sweet touch, because a lot of times this is a full family thing. You even talk about how to deal with things with your spouses if they're sort of not on board. Was that a plan from the beginning that Jason was going to write a little bit, or was that something that got added in later?
I'm going to be honest with you. When they told me I needed 50,000 words.
You were like, hey, you've self-published some books.
Hey, Jason, so you like writing? Why don't you like give your little take at the end of every chapter? You do like a Chip and Joe kind of thing, you know?
I thought that was sweet.
But I like it. He's a good writer. And he read his part in the audiobook. Jenny, I'm not kidding. I had so much fun recording the audiobook. Loved it. I would definitely recommend, if you're going to buy my book, maybe get the audiobook, because you can hear my inflection and the sarcasm and everything.
Yeah.
And when I went in to read, I made so many mistakes, but Jason just like read it perfectly the first time, everything. He didn't need any direction at all. He's amazing. So I love his little bits, especially in the audiobook. He did good.
And you weave in toward the end that he has a kidney disease. Mm-hmm. So not everything is going to be, some things are going to be conventional, some things are going to be natural, and this is a spectrum, and essential oils are not coming in to save the day here. Modern medicine is a part of your story, and your story, it inspires, I think, because it has to be a story. It's always going to be steps and a process. No one ever gets it right from the beginning, and that is encouraging. So just so thoroughly enjoyed. You have some fantastic resources at the end. You have recipes, you have websites, you have, this is where I get my makeup, baby wearing, bed sharing, food, water, shelter, clothing. I mean, wow, you covered it all. Overarching relationships are important. This is a journey. This is a spectrum. You're never going to be perfect, which is a beautiful message. Really very crunchy. A beginner's guide to removing toxins from your life without adding them to your personality. Emily, you did it.
I did it. Now I just have to sell some books.
But this is one that's worth buying, and it's one that's worth giving. We're going to talk about a gift that, you know, this is what you and I talked about right before it popped on. Like, a book can change your life. Truly. It can truly change your life. It's $20. where else can you get life change for $20? I'm serious.
I do think it would make a great gift if someone can't understand you, if your mom, if you're like starting in the crunchy life and your mom's like, well, what's wrong with dum-dums, you know?
Right.
Whatever you're struggling with in a relationship, you'd be like, hey, read this. Maybe it'll give you some insight.
Yeah, I think it also would be a really good book for someone for a baby shower, because you don't have a lot of time to read once the baby comes, but beforehand you have some time to read and reflect. And I think to know, like, you just want to know. I that's what I've always felt like. Maybe I'm not going to make the best decisions. Like, maybe we're still going to have Doritos or walking tacos or something like that. But like, I want to know. I want to at least know so that I can have the choice to make and not be looking right into the past like, oh, shoot, I wish I would have known it then.
Right. A lot of parents are just trying to survive. So they think that just giving their kid a tablet is what you do. That's what everybody does. And if they knew the science behind it and how it's altering their child's brain, they might not make that choice. And it's not a hard choice in the beginning. It's way harder to break habits than it is to just start out fresh. So yeah, I definitely think this would be a great resource for pregnant women. I even have a section like, if you're pregnant, here are some things to think about. And I don't try to say like, you should do this. It's more like, look into this. Like,
yeah, be aware.
Yeah. And then you can make an informed choice. And if you make a choice that's different than what I would do, at least it's an informed choice. So you can feel good about it.
Yep. I love it. One last question, because I didn't know. I'm like, I don't even know. You're pushing the grocery cart down the aisle. You run into Juniper's mom. Like, you don't have your bags, your reusable bags. And you're like oh, what's in my cart? And then you push it away. Is it like, oh, there's too much in here. I don't want her to even know it's mine. But you said, I hide the pineapple behind a mound of broccoli.
You wouldn't know why pineapple would be hidden.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, it is not sustainable at all to produce. And how far is that pineapple having to travel to get to you? But do you know how much water goes into growing pineapples and then shipping it all the way from, I don't know, Hawaii? Is that the best choice? I love pineapple, though. I mean, I'm not going to say that I never buy pineapple.
I loved it. I learned so much.
It's not a sustainable choice.
I learned so much. I laughed. This warmed my heart. I couldn't recommend it more. Really, very crunchy. A beginner's guide to removing toxins from your life without adding to them to your personality. Emily, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me back, Jenny.
Oh, hey, everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And this is our new podcast, Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. What happens when your creative spark just seems to disappear? Gone.
Poof. Bye.
See ya. What happens when life gets in the way of your creativity instead of nourishing it? That's what happened to Molly and me. We felt like the thing that drove us creatively stopped working and impending doom had in fact impended.
Totally. So we decided to do something about it. And that was steal ideas about getting unstuck from the most creative people we can find. We talk to guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
And we're not just talking Bob Ross type paint on paper artists here, though we talk to them too. We're talking to actors, creative directors, dancers, and people who are working hard to be their best creative selves in a world that can sometimes feel real uncreative.
We all have something to teach each other, so let's steal their ideas together.
Join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Pandemics, school calendars,
world events, lack of sleep. Oh, get out of their life gunk.
And let's get back to your best creative self. Subscribe to Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
You're not going to want to miss an episode.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking.